Thanks for tuning in. This is Matt Santos with the Mile High Show. We are recording today at The Point in Prescott, Arizona. I'll put up a link to their Facebook page and whatever other information we have for them. This is a beautiful, beautiful basement style, almost like a speakeasy bar and lounge in Prescott, Arizona. Now, I haven't been in this building in a few years. The last time I was here, it was kind of a metal bar. It was Sundance's. And it was a fun little place, funky little atmosphere. A lot of black spray paint and names of bands and stickers stuck on the wall. Reminded me a lot of some of the places in North Beach that I used to go watch music and listen to music in San Francisco. It had that kind of feel. And now it is absolutely gorgeous, well lit, you know, mood lighting, some great booths, some beautiful leather relaxing chairs and sofas, and a great, fantastic looking stage where this afternoon after the podcast, we will be listening to the Ping Brothers as they host their regular Sunday open mic. After we're sitting down with Kevin Schievel, and I've been pronouncing his name wrong for months. I've been calling him Schievel. It is Schievel. Kevin is a local musician, harp player, harmonica player, who loves the blues and kind of came into music and the harmonica a little late in life. Just been playing the last few years, and he is very, very accomplished. I was very surprised to find out this is a new project and a new passion for him. We're going to learn a little bit about Kevin's history, his growing up, what brought him to Prescott, and we're going to wrap up with another project that he is very passionate about. So thanks for tuning in. Listen, hope you enjoy it. This is my talk with Kevin Schievel, local musician and businessman, and we are recording at The Point. Stay tuned, and thanks for tuning in. First off, thanks for suggesting The Point, because this I have not been in here in a few years since it was Sundance's.
It's a good place to know about.
And it's just awesome looking. I want to make sure to get some pictures and maybe even do a couple little video clips before I cut out and get some of the open mic. Because the layout in here and the ambiance and the decor is just amazing. I don't think a lot of people know that we have something like this in Prescott.
Right, and this open mic has been helping a lot. But yeah. I'll get up in the first set and play with the Ping Brothers song.
Cool.
Just right at 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
And, they're really good. You'll enjoy them.
So what brought you? You were telling me before you're Southern Cal.
San Diego area. San Diego area primarily.
What was that's where you as a kid?
Yeah.
High school and elementary and all that.
Yeah, until into my early adulthood. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What was family like down there for the Schievel clan?
It's good. Five boys.
Five boys. Where do you fall in five?
Worked a lot to keep us fed. And
yeah. Where do you fall in line in those
second.
Five?
Second.
Yeah. Yeah. No girls in a bunch.
No girls in the bunch.
I was youngest of five, but two brothers, two
tough.
Sisters. So
yeah.
It was.
That was tough.
Yeah. Life still got the scars, emotional, physically.
Yeah, I bet.
The dart marks.
We all got those.
The mark on top of my head where hair doesn't grow anymore because of the window pane that got. That was what we called the unintentional break when you're running through the backyard and all of a sudden, clunk.
Right. Yeah.
But I will attest to this day, I was pushed.
Yeah.
That's how I got that.
Yeah. Leave it at that.
So what beach kid growing up in San Diego?
Not diehard. No, I mean I would spend a lot of time. Spent like my whole senior year on the beach. How I graduated, I'm not quite sure. Honest with you, literally.
And the nice beaches. I was up north of that. Our beaches were Half Moon Bay, Santa Cruz, which great looking, great beach culture, freezing water.
Yeah,
freezing water.
Yeah.
So surfing at all? Was that?
Yeah, dabbled. Not so much a surfer. A lot of body surfing and,
playing in the water.
Hanging out and doing stuff at the beach.
Musical family at all for you guys?
No.
Or
My mom played piano and organ, primarily like church music.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's about it.
Yeah. What did Dad do? What was his
Air freight, international freight forwarding.
Yeah.
Mid-management, worked around airports pretty much.
What was growing up like for you?
It's good. Very came from a very religious family. Yeah. So it was very strict and regimented and, you know, controlled environment.
Did your mom literally play in the church music?
No.
No? So there wasn't the gospel family?
No.
No?
She just played, you know, hymns on the piano and organ, and that was kind of...
Were you a musically inclined kid at all? Or?
No. Huh.
No?
No. I've had a guitar off and on for years, but, you know, no clue. It really had no clue how to make good sound.
More of a prop than anything else?
Yeah. Yeah, seemed like a, you know, kind of like... And it had a harmonica, you know, like a kid's carry-on harmonica. You know.
In and out, make a sound.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was, but no, really had no belief that I had any particular musical inclination.
We'll get a little of that in a little bit here. You had mentioned you started playing 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And I've heard you play, and it does not show. I would guess this was a lifelong passion for you, just listening to you play.
Thank you. My soul, I think, knows more than I do.
So what was your vocation? What pays the bills for you?
I was actually in the air freight business for quite so many years. I moved here from Seattle in 2000 or 2001. I don't recall, one or the other.
Yeah.
And my parents had retired here, and ever since I've been bouncing back of un and underemployment.
Yeah.
It's Prescott.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great atmosphere to live in. I'm enjoying it, coming from a bigger city to this area, kind of more laid back. And this is Prescott being the big city in this area. I live in the suburb of Chino.
Right, right.
The little one-horse
town. Town. Yeah.
But I love it. It's nice and relaxed and kicked back. Are you retired now, or are you still?
No, I'm working. I'm doing... assortment of construction related things. You might say I'm a handyman of sorts, but fortunately I'm very capable. So, you know, I've always been a businessman primarily, but I'm very capable. So I you know, it's kind of a survival type occupation at the moment.
And enough.
And I'm busy. I'm hurting. My body is sore.
You were saying your little snap, crackle, and pop while you're getting up off this couch over here.
Yeah. But you know that's you know you hope that gets a little better the more you do.
The more you want. One thing that'll relax it and stop those snap, crackle, and pops is a beer. You want me to? You want that over here?
Sure. Grab it, Christina.
Christina, can you hand us his lubricant?
As musicians call this tuning fluid.
Tuning fluid. What are you drinking?
That would be a Black Butte Porter.
Black Butte Porter. Yeah. Is that from Prescott Butte Brewing?
Black Butte is from Deschutes, I think. Bend, Oregon. I believe
so. It's a little darker, a little...
Yeah, it's a porter. It's nice, dark. It's not too chocolatey. But a little bit, not too, you know, much in the heavy. But
my poison of choice for a lot of years was Guinness. That's anything thick enough to stand that spoon up in all by itself was. What
yeah,
I had.
They had this McMinniman's in Portland had this what called Terminator Stout, and I could swear that stuff was basically used diesel engine oil. It was pretty heavy duty stuff.
That's a good stuff though, man. That'll keep you warm on a drizzly, damp Portland night.
Certainly did.
When did you first start picking up the harmonica? You said you had one as a kid, but a little more serious.
I had one as an adult, and you know, it was in my car. It was a C, which is the main key harmonica that you see hanging on a shelf somewhere, and didn't really do much with it. You know, once in a while a bluesy song would kind of come on, and I'd say, hey, let me pick up my harmonica and see if I can play along.
Yeah.
And didn't particularly think that I had any great skill at it. So I had one under the front seat of my car, and I was at Final Score. You know, Final Score, you've been up there? Jack, Final his crew up there, good people.
That's
used to be Scores.
Yeah, right there, Commerce and Willow
Nice
Creek,
place,
right
nice
there.
People up there. Yeah. Used to hang out on that side of town. And Sunday afternoon, it was the first Sunday afternoon of March 7 years ago. I remember it well. And this little band started setting up, and I kind of asked what was going on, and said they were doing an open jam.
Yeah.
Didn't mean anything to me. Never thought anything about band stuff in my life. Music was, you know, for my enjoyment. Went in, banged around, and went out, and never looked at a band and thought,
background.
Wow, I'd really like to do that, you know. Just wasn't part of my consciousness. So, this band set up and started playing, and, you know, I was hanging out and listening, and I thought, well, kind of playing some bluesy music. Maybe I'll go back and, you know, go out and fish my harmonica out from under the seat.
Come on,
and
dust
sit
it
back
off.
And see if I can play along to some of the songs. So I did, and a lady, musician, singer-songwriter here in town, Susan Bailey, I don't know if you know her.
Name sounds familiar.
Nice lady. She kind of walked on back and kind of eased up against me and listened for a few minutes. She says, well, why don't you go play on the microphone? Microphone? Scary, you know.
How much tuning juice did you have?
After a little more liquid courage, I did. I went up, and so they, of course, asked me what key harmonica I had so they could make sure they played a song that it was actually going to work with.
Yeah.
And I didn't know anything about.
Did you have to look at it?
I did. Yeah. Of course. Yeah, I didn't know anything about the key thing. You know, I just knew if it sounded like it went along with the song, you know, I'd play along. So they started playing, and I stepped up to the microphone, and from the very first breath into that microphone, it was like my soul breathed, like 48 years. Of holding its breath, waiting for this moment. And it just went, whew. I knew, while I didn't have any clue really what the mastery of the instrument was, I knew that this was in me.
Yeah.
I can do this. And so I'm playing away, and people were standing out there. Some people that I knew were standing there with their mouths wide open like, where's that coming from? And, of course, my mouth wasn't wide open because I'm playing harmonica, but inside I'm thinking the exact same thing. You know, I'm like, where's that coming from?
Do you remember what the song was?
No clue.
Just jamming around with whatever they happen to be playing?
Yeah. Yeah. And so...
Was that the first time you had blown through a mic, through an amplifier system?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that feeling
of it's literally a life transforming moment. I mean, it at that point in time, I became a musician.
Yeah. Now, were you a fan of harmonica music in general? I mean, because Charlie Musselwhite. There's a couple of names that I've listened to.
I doubt that I had ever listened to Charlie Musselwhite.
Musselwhite, Sonny Boy Williams.
Yeah, I'm familiar
with
them. I've familiarized myself, although I have rarely ever sat down and tried to mimic what they do because. Yeah. Because for me, harmonica is an expression. It's like my soul singing. And my soul doesn't sing like Charlie Musselwhite does. My soul sings like my soul sings.
Yeah. Interesting. And do you read music at all? You play by ear, play by heart, and play by what's with
moving? Don't have to know the song. There's something there.
So picking up from there, did you play the rest of the afternoon or just?
I did.
Yeah,
I did. And then
who was that you were playing with? Are they still around, or was it just
a
group of folks?
Yeah, they were just a kind of a casual group of folks that were that hung out up at that area, and of musicians. And no, I haven't seen. I don't think I've seen any of them around at all.
So what was your? Did you go home that night thinking, okay, this is. I'm going to sell my hammers start.
Wow. Well, yeah, at the time, I don't think I was hammering. Probably not. Maybe I was. I don't know.
Start touring the country on the back.
Yeah, but no.
Jumping on the back of a freight train somewhere.
I mean, it was literally, it was just like this awe-inspiring moment. And so I'm thinking, wow, I can do this. I've got something in me that says, that I have to do this. And so I started wandering around town. I go, where in the world can I go do this? So, I started hearing about open mics and started doing the open mic circuit down at Coyote Joe's primarily and wherever else they would have one. And then I'd wander into the clubs once in a while and beg my way into some music with some of the musicians. And some of them are pretty good about, especially, you know, if you're kind of new into it,
yeah.
And you prove to be semi-competent, they're pretty good about giving you a little bit of playing time to help you season a little bit. And some of them are very much not.
Yeah.
They're very much, their music is their music.
This is our set. This is our band.
No, you don't belong in it.
Yeah.
So,
and that's you'd mentioned that as being kind of a challenge, just to find folks to play around with. And
well, it wasn't so much of a challenge in the early years. As I become more proficient with what I'm doing, and the listening public has always loved, even when things were extremely raw, because there's this thing when you're sharing your soul, when you're truly sharing your soul, people latch onto that, and it goes beyond the technical expertise of the notes, and there's more depth to it.
Yeah.
And so people had latched on
less
to that
technical,
very,
more emotional.
Very, very early on. They understand that they're connecting with your soul, and so it's a whole different level of music. I'm learning there's all different levels of musicianship.
Yeah. Primarily associated with the blues, the harmonica is mostly. What else do you play? Is there, do you play as much variety as you can to stretch your muscles? Give me some examples.
I play with Little Larry on Sunday afternoons. I have for quite a few years. I'm just technically sitting in, but he basically allows me to play to whatever extent I wish. And his music is anything from disco to R&B to soul. He's got a little bit of country, blues, rock and roll. I'm actually a pretty decent bluegrass player. Yeah. I go down to the bluegrass festival, and you don't see a lot of harmonica in bluegrass. It's all a bunch of plinky stringed instruments.
Yeah. But it certainly lends itself to it.
And the style that I play certainly does. Yeah. So almost any, you know, some styles don't interest me too much.
What's your favorite?
Blues
are
my favorite, of course. But it just flows.
What do you think, what tune do you, if you had to pick one or two that you think you really shine in?
You know, it's kind of a cliche tune with blues purists. But I really like Stormy Monday.
Yeah.
I really, really enjoy Stormy Monday.
Yeah.
Anybody I've ever played it with it's been really nice.
What's one that you play but that you really, really have to stretch and reach and challenge yourself with? And we're going to get a chance to listen to you play some, so.
Yeah.
So we'll drop some of that in here too. But
I don't know that anything particular sticks out. There are some styles of music that I don't like.
No.
The harmonica has two distinct styles. You have what they call the blues harp, which is a cross harp, where you play in a different key than what the key of the song is, and then you have the straight harp, which is kind of like Bob Dylan and is primarily that. Neil Young is a lot
almost
of straight
a folky
harp,
kinda.
And so you're playing along in kind of the exact note
in harmony
key
to
and
the
notes
rest,
that
yeah.
the song is written in. And I don't really care too much for that sound, and so it's not a natural inclination of mine. So almost anything in that vein. Doesn't interest me a whole lot. Although a lot of those songs I can play cross harp style too.
Yeah,
but it's
put your
just,
own
but
little
it's,
spin
but
on
it's
it.
It's just a whole different style of harmonica to those songs.
What has you touched on a little bit as far as freeing kind of the inner artist in you? But what are some of the other things that you have noticed in yourself, in your attitude, and in your since you started playing? Because a lot of people think, and I'm one of them. I as a kid. Wanted to play an instrument, begged my parents, begged them to let me. It was I think it was second or third grade.
Right.
It was when they first allowed you in my elementary school to take a music class, other than, you know, choir or whatever. They would line you up and have you sing whatever. But the first time we were able to apply for and sign up for an instrument to be issued to you, and I don't know why. But at when I was six, seven, 8 years old, when I was second, third grade, for some reason I wanted the saxophone, and I don't know why.
I love saxophone. I would love to.
That's a
beautiful instrument.
Almost 40 plus years of playing, I could be I could be making a living.
Oh, sure.
Or not.
Or there's so many. You know how many great musicians there are in this world?
Yeah.
And how few of them actually make a living?
Okay, let me say, I could actually know how to play.
You'd have a chance to possibly make a living.
But I begged and begged, and they wouldn't. No, we don't have time. We don't have the money. We don't have time.
Right.
And I said, please. Finally, I begged. And they said, okay. You go and you finally asked enough. Go ahead. So I go in the next day. This is like maybe 2 weeks of me begging, and I go in. No saxophones left.
Oh.
No guitar. No. So I go home,
and that was the end of it.
And they go, you begged us to play. So you're going to play an instrument. You're going to play something. Go whatever they. I walk in. The only thing they had left, violin. I said no. I don't want to play. My mom said, you're going to play. You're going to play violin. So for a couple of months, I'm. Scratch, and I hated it.
Oh, I
hated it and hated it. So
I'm
I fought myself.
The others in the house probably weren't digging
on
it either.
Nobody. I would practice in the garage outside. Nobody. Then one day we were getting ready. It was getting for our first public performance as little kids. And my dad, who worked nights, was home that day, and he goes, "You're going to be playing in a couple of days. Go practice."
Yeah.
And he made me go pull it out and practice. And right. I played for him for about 5 minutes. And he looked at me and says, you don't have to play violin anymore. So we
off
put it
the
away.
Hook.
They returned it, and I didn't have to play again.
Yeah.
And now, as a almost mature 50-year-old man, almost mature, not quite.
Yeah.
I really kick myself and go, now what if I would have learned to play a violin or something,
you'll
learn to read music or whatever.
You'll enjoy the Ping Brothers. They have a really nice fiddle player.
Fiddle and violin, two different things.
But what I'm saying is you'll appreciate it. He's really good.
Yeah. Hey, Nate. Hey, Nate. Grab something. I got a card going. Go ahead. And we're gonna do a little commercial with my buddy Nate over there.
Ah,
he escaped the house. His wife, his wife's out riding her mountain bike. I think.
Nice.
He told me he was gonna come down. But yeah, I kicked myself saying, you know, I wish I would have. And now, as an adult, and you know, the last 10, 15 years, I'm like, I don't have the time. I don't have the patience. You know, I've got an old acoustic guitar in the house, and I all strum on it, and it sounds like a old acoustic guitar that hasn't been tuned in 20 years. I don't have the patience. I don't have I have the desire, but not the patience or the discipline to learn anything. And years ago, I've got a couple harps laying around the house that my son now plays with.
Right.
And I had gotten up and played, you know, with a couple of bands guys that I knew that did the bar scene in the San Francisco Bay Area, and they were great musicians.
Mm-hmm.
And it was basically to give their singer a break and a couple of laughs, letting me go up there. But it was horrible, and I've heard some tapes of them. Oh. It was just terrible, but it was a lot at the time.
Yeah, bad
it was
harmonica can be pretty bad.
Oh, I would get confident enough with as much liquid courage as I would force down my gullet at the
unfortunately,
time.
Listening public hadn't had quite that much.
A couple of them weren't bad. And then I would know when it got bad enough, I would just stop and I'd sing a couple. But it was something that was done a dozen or so times, enough for me to realize that is not a skill that I possess.
Yeah.
So,
and I never even got that. I don't know that I had the patience to learn something. But the thing is, the thing is, I didn't have to learn. I just learned. I didn't learn how. I learned that I could.
That you could. You.
I just learned that I had the ability already there. There's been a process of mastering. Well, I wouldn't say I've mastered it, but the process of mastering an instrument goes on forever.
Put your counselor voice on, your teacher voice on right now, your teacher hat, and give some advice to folks like myself or like anybody else who's saying, you know what, I'm already too old for that. That's something kids would learn to do, or I don't have the time to do it. And somebody who yourself did this kind of as a whim and later in life, what kind of advice can you give to some folks?
Well, you know, I've started playing guitar, and I don't play guitar in the sense of what you see people playing around. It's more in a very picked improvisational, but it's not natural for me, and so I have to play, and I have to play, and I have to play, and I don't know that I would know how to sound like somebody else there again, because it's all pretty much my music that comes flows from me, but it takes regular practice. People have asked me, well, can you teach me how to play harmonica? And I look at them, I say, no. I can't teach you what I didn't teach myself.
Exactly,
And, you know, it's just the bottom line.
Yeah.
I didn't learn how to play harmonica. I learned that I could play harmonica. Yeah.
Ever too late for somebody to start?
I don't think
so. In your eyes? No?
No, I doubt that.
Now, I've gotten a chance to see you a couple times. The last time specifically I remember was with Sky, Sky Conwell over at Brick and Bones. I've seen you, I want to say Birdcage maybe?
Could be at Don's. Yeah, I used to play a lot with Don. He was always real good. The old Brick and Bone, I mean, when it was Coyote Joe's. Thursday night open mic was one of the best nights of music in town. It was packed. It was a good mix. High energy. It was just a really nice place, and nothing in town has ever gotten quite back to that feel, I don't think.
Hopefully it's cyclical, because I've talked to a few other musicians locally who said the same thing, Jim Sobo being one, Don Cheek another,
that
there were times where, you know, it was just so deep and entrenched, the open mic scene. And it's Don specifically, Don Cheek of the Cheektones, he had mentioned it's kind of waning a little bit, and it's a little more struggled. But there's still some dynamite music out there.
Yeah, and part of the thing is, what I see is, and this is part of my, you know, this is what part of what comes along with being just a harmonica player is, you don't just go out and play harmonica. You have to have musicians to indulge you, and so it's been a beautiful blessing being able to play. I mean, it's joyous. It's just joyous to let your soul sing. The curse that comes along with that is that I always have to have an agreeable musician to indulge my soul.
And let's talk a little bit about that, because that was one of the challenges that you had said. Who are some that have welcomed you and that you enjoy playing with locally?
Well, you know, obviously Little Larry. Little Larry's been extremely helpful. You know, I used to just pop in on him. He plays solo. You know, he's got his band, which, you know, of course, Jerry Lloyd's just kind of like the house guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And he plays on Saturdays and Sundays solo, has for years. And I kind of wandered in a few times. And actually, I think the first couple times I was kind of told, well, you know, there's another harmonica player in town, and he's Larry's guy. And they didn't play that regular that I could see. And I started playing, and, you know, it's been a progress, the music of, you know, becoming more and more and more and more mature. And so the more that I started playing with Larry, the same songs with the same person. See, because when you go out and you beg your way into music, you play a couple songs with a band or a guy or a whatever once every month and a half. And it's really difficult to really dial in. You know, maybe a song you've never even played before. And you know, sometimes it can be very, very good, but it's you can't really dial in a lot of the subtle nuances of it. So Larry's been very, very helpful. Los Guy is a band that used to come to town out of the valley. They're a really, really nice southwestern-y band. I sat in with them real regular for quite some many number of years. They were real good. And they were, you know, there's some fairly big-time players down in the valley. So they've always been really, really nice. But it's trying to find a group of guys or a band that will let me play. There's something missing in the appreciation of harmonica, I think, with the musicians. And a lot of it ties into money, because a lot of the musicians limit the scope of their music by the money.
What do you mean? Explain that.
Because you got a three or four piece, you get paid X amount from a bar. And let's face it, there aren't anybody... very few people, especially in this town, that are getting rich off of playing music.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about the money, you're obviously, you know, thinking the wrong way to begin with. You know, there's some people eking out a small living, and I understand they have to protect that.
Yeah, there's a few guys that are making a few folks making a living at it. More often than not, it's guys who have the passion for it and are trying to cover their expenses.
Right. And so. So I hear a lot, nobody wants to pay a harmonica player. Well, you know, if I'm a band and you've got something that somebody does that gives a whole different dimension to what you're doing. And people obviously appreciate that. And they do. They obviously appreciate my music.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what they tell me.
What is it about the harmonica? Though? Because it is. People love it. People,
yeah,
it,
they do.
It brings a smile to folks. Mm-hmm. Even the hardcore blues, it's like, oh, there's yeah. the harmonica. Why is that, in your opinion?
Yeah. Well, because it's almost, you know, the vast majority of popular music is a good lead guitar player, singer, a bass player, a drummer, maybe something else thrown in there, maybe a rhythm guitar player, maybe a keyboard, maybe a whatever. And so when you're playing a lead instrument, which is what I do with the harmonica, I mean, I play a lot of background stuff, but it's basically a lead instrument, and bands are always fronted by lead guitar players.
Yeah.
So there has to be this mindset, and I found that musicians tend to be somewhat egotistical
yeah.
about what they do. And, you know, I just dig playing music. I mean, I just dig playing. It feeds my soul.
Yeah. One of the things that I have always liked and appreciated and enjoy about harmonica is any other instrument, excuse me, any, you know, from the scale up, from a, you know, from a grand piano, even down to something as simple as an old beat up acoustic guitar, it's still an instrument. It's still a large thing that
right.
could be done in a concert hall or a bar or a restaurant or something.
Right.
And it's more of a, it's, I don't want to say intimidating. I don't even know what I'm trying to say. It's more of a,
well, harmonica's almost like an event. Harmonica is like a glorified toy.
Well, that, and not even so much that. Take from like the old Western movies or kids sitting around a mm-hmm. campfire or a family sitting around a fireplace. It's almost distracting. It's a huge piano. Okay, somebody's yeah. going to sit down and
right.
play the piano. Everybody sit
but,
there.
But somebody can always whip a harmonica out of the brim of their hat.
Out of that, and, or out like of a pocket.
Like,
and it's just so much more intimate.
Right.
And it just, it's almost like when somebody's playing a piano.
Yeah.
They start playing, you sit up.
Yeah.
And you listen. When somebody pulls out a harmonica, what you want to do is lean in and
right.
just listen and watch. And it's almost meant for a small,
yeah.
you know.
Well, it is, but, you know, when it's acoustic, it's one thing. When it's amplified, it's a completely different thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
but it's still, I can hear somebody wailing on a guitar and sound dynamite.
Right.
And I think, you know, arena rock, large show, piano, concert piano. When I hear harmonica, I think, small, intimate, mm-hmm. little smoky bar, little mm-hmm. small room. Even if it's going through a system,
right?
It's a one-on-one. It's not so, and that's just my own romanticism.
Yeah.
I guess
everybody's got their own thing, but it is well liked with the listening public. I find that the musicians, at least it seems like in Prescott, don't perceive the value
That's
of it.
That's too bad.
And my thought is, as a band, if you've got something that somebody does, and you can see it when I play with bands, they can see the people like
yeah,
the music.
The benefit of having
and
that.
So as a band, for my mind, that's what you're looking for. You want people to like your band as much as possible. And so the more diverse, the broader the sound of music you can put out without taking into consideration the $10 that the other band members might have to give up to have it there, the better music you can make, the better the opportunity to maximize your earnings potential
yeah.
if that's what you're focusing on. And I hate to think about limiting music by money. It just doesn't make sense to me at all.
So do we see the Sheevil band in the future?
I've advertised a few times. I need to get out a little bit more and meet some people. I don't know that it would be my band. I'm not sure that I'm a front man. But certainly I'm a marketing guy.
Yeah.
And certainly could help the band in that way. But yeah, certainly I'm trying to come up with a group of guys that that are either playing that are open to expanding their music a little bit, or potentially just piecing something together. And that's a lot of that's just luck.
Yeah.
Meet the right person, and they know somebody, and so on and so forth. And but it's time. It's time to stop playing two and three songs with people every month and a half. And the few open mics. And the open mics have. This one's really, you know, really enjoyable, but they have become less inspiring, probably because of the amount of music I played now, you know, compounds, and so it becomes less attractive. But it's not doesn't quite seem to be, like you say, the scene that it used to be.
So, but there is still a strong open mic scene.
Yeah,
let's
absolutely.
Talk. Let's go on the positive end here. Let's talk about so. Well, first off, today Sunday is at 3 o'clock. Three-ish in the afternoon at the Point, the Ping Brothers.
Ping Brothers.
Now, what's your association with them?
You know, I met Frank. It was Doug and Frank Ping. Frank is the older brother. They're both from Kentucky.
So that's their name, Ping. I have not met these
Ping
guys.
Brothers.
I've
Frank.
Traded some messages on Facebook with them.
Frank and Doug
but
Ping.
That's got to be. I'm in my head. That's got to be a stage name. No, this is
that's their name. And Frank moved here a few years back. I don't remember exactly. Maybe three. And I had run into him through some mutual acquaintances, and we'd played some music at some open mics and have actually been at his place a time or two playing music. And then his brother Doug moved into town, and Doug is easily one of the very best pickers in this town,
and
an extremely good picker.
I'm not ignoring you. I was just glancing at my phone because I'm going through, and I want to make sure we don't forget. I had a listing, and I can't find it, so I'm just going to ditch that. Ping Brothers at the Point on Sundays.
Point, 3 o'clock?
3 p.m.
They host an open mic.
And then there is an open mic that I don't know if it's new or not. I've just seen it 6 p.m. at the Windsock on Sundays
now. That is
now.
Something new, yeah.
Is that, that's
I
a
don't
new
recognize
one.
Who's running that. I saw the name, and I didn't recognize it.
Tuesdays at the Birdcage. Now, back up. The Thursday at the Birdcage.
Thursdays.
7, I think they start.
7:30, I believe. Don Cheek.
That's Don Cheek's.
That
and that is a very well-established and some great musicians there.
Right.
And one that's somewhat new last few months is the Tuesdays at the Birdcage.
Oh, with...
Have you sat in there?
No, it's a painting and singing thing.
It's music,
I've heard about it.
Spoken
Carl
word,
Jones,
poetry.
The Irish guy. Yeah.
They whip out easels and paint and clay, and it is.
Yeah, well, Brian probably has something to do with that. He's a he's an interesting guy, so I'm sure.
I'm sure
he's helping organizing it. Yeah,
I had a ball.
Like
it was
Carl
hilarious.
Jones.
It was. I mean, and I mean, in a good way. It was. The just the freedom and the
I can see that
it was so much fun. It was it was like stepping into the LSD version of the LSD episode of Dragnet from 67, where everybody's just dancing around.
I haven't checked it out, but I'm aware of it.
At the same time, what was great about it is there were the like Don Cheek's Thursday night.
Yeah.
It's open. You come in, you sign up, but every musician that takes that stage is really, really good.
Yeah.
I haven't heard it. So it's almost a little it's not one for somebody I shouldn't speak for the guys there, but I would not want to go up there as the first time taking the mic on an open mic.
Yeah.
There's some,
that are a little more intimidating than others.
This Tuesday night.
Garrett Rollins does one also.
When?
On Wednesdays at the Brick and Bones.
At Brick and Bones, Wednesday
right.
night.
Okay. And it'll be getting real nice on the patio there soon, so that should be well attended.
That Tuesday at the Cage has some great, great musicians up there playing and some incredibly talented artists painting down in the bar area. And then there's also folks that look like it's the very first time they picked up a bongo, and other people it's the very first time they picked up a paintbrush, and it was just so welcoming. It's like, hey, go for it. And so I'm going to go in there one day and start painting.
I remember I was told about that. I read about it, but I haven't wandered in.
It was just very, very fun, and then one of the guys that is there that I sat down and talked with, David Portolano, is going to start, and it's going to be, I believe, once a month at the Cage on Mondays. Well, I'll put links to this all up on my Facebook and on my website as well. But there are some great opportunities, some great outlets for musicians and artists to really try out new things and flex their muscles
it's a great
and things.
Town for that. Yeah.
There are It's a great artist community. Yes, it's a great musical and artistic area we live in.
Right.
Much of that centers around our courthouse square, which
the heart of our city. Yeah.
Wherever you live in the country, if you haven't seen a picture of our courthouse square, you've seen pictures of others that look just like it.
Rubber stamps.
Mid late 1800s, authentic, surrounded by some great looking bars and restaurants and boutiques and things. It's a great place to come check out.
It is.
But there are also some challenges for local businesses. That was another thing that you had mentioned to me. Let's go that direction. Let's talk a little bit about that.
I've been drawn into local activism. I call myself an advocate for the downtown merchants. My sweetheart Christina over there moved into the area and opened up a really beautiful women's boutique after years of successful women's boutiques down the valley. And up on Cortez, in the Goldwater building, right?
She's open there now?
No. This was about 3 years ago.
Okay. And I was going to tell you to give her a plug, but...
No. And Darren, that's part of the problem is that it didn't take too long. We understood that there's a tourist season, and that's kind of where the gravy of the... No, we do not have time.
Yeah, no, we're good. No, I just look at my battery thing.
That there's huge tourist activity in town, and of course, anywhere around the square sees a lot of those people, thousands and thousands and thousands of them during the summer season.
Yeah,
and the events that happen on the square obviously,
different
are a
concerts,
magnet for people.
art showings, and
so of course the thought was that this would be a really nice place to set up this beautiful store. Of course, looking to develop local business long-term, because you live off the locals week after year, you have to develop that local business. But recognizing that there's this huge tourist opportunity because you have this season where the population of the city swells every weekend. And for some reason, we weren't realizing much benefit during the tourist season. And the first year, we were so busy trying to market and set up and do this and develop that we didn't really have the time to look at the factors. We just noticed that things didn't appear to be as robust as we would have expected.
Yeah.
And it was 3 years ago in May... The weekend that they do the Phippin Western Museum show. Great show. Real high-end art. Brings a lot of quality people to town.
From around the country and some from Europe.
Well-regarded. Yeah. And so I was out walking around, and I walked over to the parking lot behind the Chamber of Commerce, across from Brick and Bones.
Uh-huh.
And there was about 75 vendors there selling all kinds of everything that you can buy all around our city square.
Yeah. But coming in from out of the area?
Primarily, yes. Clearly, in my subsequent investigations, I've learned that it's largely out of town transient merchants.
Go from festival to festival, kind of thing.
I call them modern day gypsies. and in looking at what was happening, this traffic flow would flow down off the square, off the FIP, and down off Whiskey Row, and would naturally just flow right through this shopping center. But we weren't noticing that traffic continuing on around to our side of the square. And so I started looking at it, and there was a lady selling women's clothing. She had some of the exact same models that we had in our store. And she was doing huge business. Well, this lady has a store in Scottsdale. And so she sells her tourist season during the winter and then comes up here and cherry picks our tourist season during the summer when she can't sell down there. And I got to thinking, this lady's doing four times the business, five, six, eight times the business that we're going to do in our store this weekend.
Yeah.
There's something not right here.
Yeah.
So it's on our city property.
That brings a kind of the twist to it, because one argument to that is, well, hey, it's free market, it's capitalism, These are typically events that are put on by either the chamber or the town direct.
Quote, nonprofit organizations. Organizations that are supposed to be civic-minded, pro-community organizations.
Because it's good to get that that exchange of ideas and commerce and things, but when it starts to drain on the locals,
Exactly.
That's where it...
So I started investigating and started talking to the Chamber of Commerce, and they were really rather flippant. Well, we believe in free enterprise, blah, 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 blah. You know, of course you do, because you're making over $150,000 a year.
I was going to say, they're charging for space.
They did literally over $150,000 gross a year from special events, which are primarily leasing booths on our public property.
And primarily to folks not local.
They're written in by ordinance.
Yeah.
That only this handful of nonprofit organizations can sponsor these shows. And there's constitutional issues with that, I've subsequently learned. Anyway, that's a whole other segment.
That's another hour podcast.
So I started talking to the merchants and realized that the vast majority of the merchants in this downtown had concerns over these arts and craft shows, that the perception that they're great for the city doesn't carry over to the merchants across the street. And so if they're not great for the whole city, they're not great for the city.
Yeah.
And
so without asking you to speak on behalf of each and every storefront in town, what is some of the feeling that you got in your conversations? Well,
they were mirroring what we were seeing. You know, we in the couple of years that we were down there, you know, I have documented, we would see, and they were mirroring our experience. Uh-huh. And this is our experience. I've had people that I've gone to for help said, I don't believe you. I'm like, you don't believe me. We have seen up to 90% drops in business on the busiest holiday weekends of the year. Not a 200% spike in business.
Yeah.
Up to 90%.
Which is what you would expect.
Up to 90% of the business that we would have had were there not 10,000 people in town.
Yeah.
Vaporizes.
Huh.
Regularly. 70 to 90%. And so I was getting this same. Now, I didn't get hard numbers from people, but I was getting this same sentiment from people. I had 60 merchants sign petitions saying we have issues with these, quote, arts and craft shows. In doing some research into the history, I learned that back in the early 2000s, they passed an ordinance, a law. It's county's property, so it's their laws. They control all this. They made a law that stated that the sales of resale goods is not allowed at these major events. A law.
Okay.
Now, if you walk through any of these shows, you know that they are. So I call them sales. Largely imported goods.
Clarify that. Of resale goods.
The show sponsor shall ensure, to the best of their ability, that all goods sold are handcrafted, not resale.
So
if it says made in China, it's been purchased, it's a resale product.
So they want
artists.
Kevin to come in and sell a photograph you took, you printed, a painting you printed, as opposed to you going to Oriental Trading or to Costco and buying a case of things and then coming out and selling them.
Correct.
That's the law, and that's the principle, and
it's to keep it, number one thing, to keep these things in a scope to where they're actually artists here, arts people and craftsmen. And number two, it's to protect the merchants across the street from unfair competition.
Who are selling the resale goods? It's a mixture of both.
Year-round pay taxes and pay rent and suffer through the winter and should have access to our tourist base.
So that's the letter of the law. That's the spirit of the law. That's the thinking behind these festivals. But you're saying it's not what's actually happening.
It's obvious to everybody. Yeah. It's inarguable that they are not obeying this law.
You've got somebody who's selling in a booth handcrafted soaps that are made from different things and candles, and at the same time, right next to it, you flip one over and it's a barcode from
a rack of clothing made in Nepal and Mexico
exactly
and China.
What's being sold at the boutique down the street.
And so these are people who they don't pay a city sales tax. The city will tell you they do. Well, we charge them a fee. It's a fee. It's an in lieu of tax fee.
Yeah.
Well, no, it's not. It's a transient merchant fee that every transient merchant that comes in our city must pay.
Yeah.
And then they waive the sales tax.
Gotcha.
And so,
So you see, you've gotten petitions. You've talked to folks. Where have you taken those? Where do they go?
You know, I've taken it everywhere I could. The net result for Christina and us is that it was unsurvivable. It was apparent to me when I first saw it this has to change or it's unsurvivable.
And what's the town's take on it? What have they? What?
Well, everybody, you know, I'll hold my words on it specifically, but this has gone on for so many years. I got an article here from the Courier, 1991, August 16th.
Of 91?
Merchants, Plaza Events, Steel Sales. This is from September 5th. Downtown merchants cry, Plaza's events cannibalizing their sales.
Email me that, and I'll put those links on there, too. Give a little plug over to my friends over at the Courier.
So in talking to the people, you know, this has gone on for decades.
Yeah.
And what they used to call unfair competition, what it really boils down to, as far as I can see, so the city will say, well, we have higher hotel occupancy on those weekends.
Yeah.
Well, of course you do. You have 150 out-of-town merchants. Where are they going to go? think about it.
Yeah, where are they? Unless they're going to be sleeping right in there.
Right. And some of the city does really well.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. But you cannot sacrifice a segment of your community so that everybody else can prosper. You have to find a system that best accommodates every single demographic and group in this downtown business area, and the merchants are being left out store after store.
Yeah.
Of those 60 people that signed those petitions in the last 2 years, at least 12 of them are no longer in business, and there are reasons for that. It's systematic,
and at this point, it's even if they just stuck to the laws that are already on the books, it would be a big help.
Would help. Now, I've started this Prescott Downtown Merchants Association. I've had 40 people. Not all of them are in business anymore.
Okay.
And we're not an organization. We're simply a collective voice.
And
we're not organized. We're not a corporation. We take. I say we're a for-profit organization. We're a no fee. We don't charge anything.
Yeah.
Advocating for the profit of all the downtown merchants, and so we believe that the system is flawed.
Yeah.
If it ever was beneficial, it isn't beneficial anymore. And so we think that moving from a sales-based model for the downtown in our city to an arts and entertainment-based model, more things like the Bluegrass Festival, like the Phippen Museum show, which is true arts and crafts, and the merchants do well on the Phippen weekend, even in spite of the fact that they put these 75 competitors down there in the city parking lot.
Yeah.
And so what we're trying to get them to say is, do the right thing for everybody in this city. Don't just keep doing the status quo and ignoring the fact that people are losing their livelihoods, their homes, their businesses, their savings. This segment of our community is collateral damage for this system that they've set up, which my take on it is it's a system set up to support the Chamber of Commerce and a couple of nonprofit organizations. And they don't care the damage that it causes to the merchants of the city.
Which and are the ones that sustain
which are the
town.
Ones that you would
with,
think the Chamber of Commerce
the tax
would be
base
all
and
for.
Everything, yeah.
And so, you know, but when you're the CEO of the Chamber of Commerce makes well over $100,000, he's not too inclined. He's going to hold on to that because there's vested interest.
Yeah. So if anybody out there is interested in knowing more about what you're talking about,
reams of documentation.
The Prescott Downtown Merchant Association. Is there how do they contact them, or is it more of a loose?
I've got an email, Prescott Downtown Merchants Association at hotmail.com.
At Hotmail. I'll put a link to that.
Yeah. And so, you know, I keep talking. I've talked to everybody. I've gotten no help from anybody. The county 2 years ago said, sorry, don't expect any changes this year. They continue to ignore me. I've talked to the city numerous times. And, you know, we have the downtown partnership is paid by the county to manage every event on the square. The content, to enforce the rules, to adhere to the rules. And they do the same. They have the biggest show of the year with resellers. Their own board member sold his resale product last year. And they've always said, well, people slip through. We don't know. They lost. Well, that kind of goes out. That argument, their loan argument kind of goes out the door when your own board member selling his is obviously resale product. But they're paid our taxpayer dollars to see that this doesn't happen.
So what's the fix? How do we get it? In your opinion, how do you get this fixed?
Well, the first thing is we have to enforce and obey the law.
So what's already out there?
It's out 15 years, and they haven't enforced it yet. And merchants continue to die, and we have some real healthy nonprofits.
You think it's just it's too much of an influx of money on these special events to
No, for, it's not. That's if they're concerned about keeping tourists coming to town. Well, number one, they're coming. Prescott's on the map.
Yeah,
I mean they're coming. But number two, if you have something, we say entertain the folk and let them spend their money in our city. Because what happens is you got hundreds of thousands of tourists coming into town. If they're spending a large portion of that money with out-of-town vendors who don't pay city sales tax and then take all that money back out of town at the weekend, the only thing we've done is we've shuffled a little bit of money off to a nonprofit organization. We've helped a bar and a restaurant be successful. But a huge amount of these tourist dollars that we're touting coming into our city are just circulating right back out of town at the end of the weekend. It's not spent here on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, retax, and we don't have the healthy merchants that we should have in our city with all these tourists because we're encouraging them to spend with an out-of-town market. And it's wrong. We can have events, and they say, well, how do we pay for them? Well, if I'm a downtown merchant and I'm actually being allowed to make money, I will gladly sponsor a blues festival. I will gladly kick in a couple hundred bucks because I know I'm going to make thousands of dollars. If it's events that I know are going to take the bulk of my regular sales, there's no chance in the world that I'm going to be on board with that ever.
Yeah,
it's simply immoral. And so it lacks creativity, and the people who just want to keep the status quo are the people whose buddies are doing well or their organizations are doing well, and these merchants don't enter into the conversation. And it's decades, 1991. They're saying the exact same words that I said before I ever even saw it. I mean, literally the same phrases. You know, local jeweler, we might as well shut down our doors and go home when there are shows on the plaza. And they're that's a major established jeweler here in town.
That's the exact opposite of what, just without scratching the surface, just go, oh, well, you're bringing in 10,000 people. We should be doing gangbusters.
The general public's perception is that this is the greatest thing for our city. And when you look at the tax situation, you look at what it does to the merchants, and you think, well, why can't we find a system that accommodates everybody? Well, you know why? Because it leaves some nonprofit organizations. They can't figure out how to replace that budget. And so it's very complicated, and I believe it's also very political. But the fact of the matter is unsuspecting people are stepping into this and losing. Christina lost everything. Everything she's worked her whole life for, after doing all the right things, having great credit score, money set aside. And it's been taken away by a system that has it built in that that's going to happen to a number of people in this town over and over. And it is unsurvivable, almost unsurvivable, for virtually any new business in the center of our city to get a foothold.
So for the neighboring communities, for the folks that live here in town, for you know, anybody listening to this, some steps that we all could make in order to help out the problem is spend locally.
Well, spend locally for one.
Visit the smaller shops.
Right.
Go on in.
That's helpful. I think we need to apply a little pressure to our board of supervisors, the county, and ask them why are they.
I have Craig Brown's home phone number. I'll post that on here.
Yeah, I've talked to Craig Brown a couple of times, and you know I've met with these people directly, and the first
I'll post his address.
The first words out of Craig Brown's mouth was, "Is this a real or a perceived problem?" Well, I don't know, Craig. Back in 1991, merchants say plaza events steal sales. I don't know. What do you think? You think I run around town taking on every politician trying to fix something just because I enjoy doing this?
And the rotating names on the signs and the doors and things, yeah.
It's harming people's lives, and there's a system that will work for the city and work for everybody in the city, but they won't take the time to look at some change.
Well, I will put some links up on these articles. So if you could email me those, and we'll put them up.
They're the old microfiche.
So people can look at. Well, they're on the web.
They're on the web. They're very interesting.
We'll give a little plug to those folks over at the Courier. They could use it.
Yeah,
get out there, spend locally.
Spend locally.
Go out and support the local musicians too, so that they then can make some more money playing, and then they in turn spend it at the restaurant.
Wouldn't it be beautiful if on a holiday weekend we didn't have 150 merchants, but we had 150 musicians playing music at every corner of our square, and the tourists were milling about enjoying themselves, and we had artists painting, and we had jugglers juggling, and we had wonderful music festivals, blues festivals to go along with the bluegrass festival to go along with this, and we left money in the tourist pockets to go, and we sent them across the street and said, go walk down our streets and spend your money.
Yeah.
Because that stays here. That's what truly benefits the whole city. Yeah. And that's all we're at. We're asking to obey the law, and then why don't we look at something that works? Because clearly, no matter what you say, the people that have been here forever know this has been an issue for 30, 40 years. So a little change could go a long ways if we could just get people to let go of some of their personal relationships.
So good thing, get out there, spend locally.
Please do. Yes.
Get out there and listen to some local music. Mm-hmm. If you are...
And somebody come up with somebody whose band I can join.
I don't know. I think the Kevin Schievel band is where it's got to be. You're going to be the front man.
Yeah.
I think you're it. We're going to have to...
Maybe. I just haven't met all those people yet, but I'm certainly certainly willing to do the work and capable of moving the masses, shall we say.
Well, we will continue here on Mile High Show to promote as many local artists, local musicians as we can. We'll get a list and continually populate that list with the open mics, the live shows, the places where you can go out and hear music, not just on a night out up and down the road, but on places you can bring your families to and spend time as a family listening to some great music, like we're going to do in a few minutes here with Kev and with the Ping Brothers. If you out there know of some things that we are not publicizing, if you know of some open mics we've forgotten, or if you are a performer who has some dates coming up, send them on over to us. Go to milehighshow.com. Go to the contact page. Email me where and when you'll be playing. We're putting together a calendar page for the web that we will be putting on the web, of course, and also through our Twitter feed, our Facebook feed, our Instagram feed. So we can... I keep kicking myself. I keep saying we. It's me,
you,
my microphone, and my van.
Well, that's
and
we.
that's the show.
Inanimate objects can be part of a we.
Start talking back to me, though, that's when I worry about it.
And make sure you support the Mile High Show and in alternative media.
Yeah. There's a lot of info out there that the 90-second sound bites on the news. They play a great part. Local radio, our local paper, they play a great part in informing our public of events and things and news. That's not what I do. I like to find folks that don't necessarily get the chance to sit in front of a microphone or sit in front of a reporter and get that information out there, like the Prescott Downtown Merchant Association at hotmail.com. Like Mr. Schievel here, who's going to be blowing harmonica for us in a little bit, and all the other great musicians. Anything in that stack of paperwork there that you want to hit before we wrap this up?
I don't think so. I just brought it along just in case we went one way or the other.
Send me those links. We'll put them up there so people can get a little history. Don't believe me. Don't believe Kevin. Read. Absolutely. And better yet, come on down to the square some Saturday afternoon, walk in and out of the stores, buy a little something, buy anything from a postcard to a several hundred dollar jacket. It doesn't matter.
Let them know you're there to support the local merchant.
Buy some art, pop your head into a restaurant or a bar or two, and listen to some music, have a beverage, have a bite to eat, and drop in the point. This place is absolutely gorgeous.
Yes, it is.
What are you sneaking in for just as we're wrapping up?
I know, I'm dying.
It's the fantastic Danny Fisher, last week's guest. And Chris, who brought his guitar, because you guys are going to be playing some music. Good deal. We that a perfect example of folks coming into the Ping Brothers open mic.
I know I missed it. I blew it.
Yeah, okay. That's fine. You didn't miss nothing. Order yourself a drink, Thomas, on me.
Ah, you still got the open mic coming.
I broke this week. I hope he still gives me a drink.
Kevin, thank you for sitting down with us. We're going to wrap up here. We're going to listen to some music, get some pictures, and this was a lot of fun. Thanks a lot.
I agree. Thank you.
Well, that was it. That was my talk with Kevin Skivel, who I've been pronouncing wrong all these months. Again, he had some interesting ideas and some concerns about local business here in Prescott, Arizona, and what it will take to fix the economic struggles that some of these merchants are facing. So get a hold of him at Prescott Downtown Merchant Association at hotmail.com. If I got that right, I don't know. I'll put a link on milehighshow.com for his email. If you'd like some information, I will also have some links to those articles he was talking about. But if you take anything away from this episode, spend locally, visit your local restaurants, bars, stores, merchants, where you can buy a local goods from local folk. It's very important. As a small business owner myself, I definitely know that feeling. So do that. Go in, spend locally. And while you're at it, poke your head in places like The Point, which is quite possibly going to be a new recording spot for us. In Prescott Valley, go into Gabby's Grill, a new friend of ours and home for that we'll be recording in. Brick and Bones, who we're at quite a bit, The Palace, The Raven, all these places that we talk with our guests in, and we do so because we recognize how important it is to support the local artists, the local businesses, and the local scene, whether that be music, art, comedy, whatever. We want to make sure our local businesses are able to survive and produce the quality product and entertainment that we've come to expect and that we desire. It's a lot of fun out here in Prescott in the Quad Cities area, and we hope you enjoyed it. I'm going to close out with some music, I think, from this open mic. Danny Fisher, last week's guest, just took a picture of me, so I'll have to steal that phone and delete it. We no likey pictures. Thanks for listening. Don't forget, every Monday on iTunes, TuneIn, and Stitcher Radio is where you can find The Mile High Show, and also on milehighshow.com. We've got a player embedded to that site where you could listen to this and all our past episodes, and links to those folks that we sit and talk with. And don't forget, if you're so inclined, hit that PayPal button. Hit that donate button and drop us a buck or two. Literally, you wanted to put in a buck? That's fine. You want to put in more? That's fine, too. That helps pay our transportation to and from these shows. We've got a couple scheduled for some more in the Phoenix area and possibly out of state. So all your help could be would be greatly appreciated. Also, it helps buy refreshments for our guests and a couple of audience members that show up. All of our recording sessions are open to the public, and we invite you to visit and like our Facebook page, The Mile High Show, where we list where we will be recording, and we would love to have you guys show up, observe, and if you want, take part. And who knows, I might buy you a drink or something to snack on. So check us out, Facebook, at Mile High Show, milehighshow.com. Come in, stop by. You see me walking around with my microphone. Stop me, say hi, and maybe I'll buy you a drink. If you are a local business and want to sponsor an episode or more, we are reaching, we're not a huge audience, but we are reaching. We hit, we're just under 12,000 listens for our 17, 18 episodes that are up there. So that ain't bad for some schmo working out of his van, driving around, trying to get people to talk to me. So I appreciate it. This is Matt Santos. Thanks for listening to the My High Show.